You have to kind of feel, George, not only is he losing his daughter to Brian, he's going to have to pay a pretty price tag to do the process. Did you catch the list of expenses just in that little clip? Moving furniture, electrical work, food costs, planting flowers, a new tux. Let's not forget the swans. And you know what? That just begins to bring the tip of the iceberg. I mean, he's going to have to fly family members, and he's going to have to pay for parking valet, and he's got all these things. And you know what George is finding out? Weddings are expensive. How expensive? Well, I'm glad you might want to know that, because guess what? According to the poll that does surveys for weddings, the average cost of a wedding in America in 2019 was $24,723. Now you're thinking, oh, well, we live in Virginia. It couldn't possibly be that bad here. Well, understand, Virginia was above average. The average cost of a wedding in Virginia last year, $29,196. Yeah, forget about college costs. You've got to take out tuition grant just to get your daughter married. Oh, my goodness, because guess what? That isn't even the biggest thing. You know what? If you want the expensive state, well, that would be go to Hawaii and get married. Hawaii, the average cost is $37,827. But they don't have the most expensive city. The most expensive city is actually New York City, where the average cost of a wedding is $76,944. My kid be learning the mighty word. It's called elope. Okay, seriously. I mean, that's a lot of money. But if you want the bargain basement, if you want the Chippa wedding, then you know what? All you have to do is move to Alabama, $17,216. Now, you do realize these costs, they vary depending on what day you're going to get married, what month you're going to get married, because the most expensive month to get married, believe it or not, is October. You want a cheaper wedding? Fine, go get married in March. Nobody wants to get married in March. The weather's too unpredictable. How about day of the week? You know, I can get you a discount there, because the most expensive day to get married, believe it or not, is Saturday. You know what the cheapest day to get married is? Tuesday. For some reason, nobody wants to get married on Tuesday. So here you go. If you're looking for a cheaper wedding, move to Alabama, get married on Tuesday in March, and there you go. You can have the cheapest wedding possible. The thing is, and I noticed a cringe on Matt's face back there, because he has one son and one daughter, because when we start talking about these costs in our culture today and the American society, the bride's family consumes 85% of the price tag. You see, now you know I'm praising God. I've got two boys. Oh, yeah. No daughters. That's incredible. Now, just so you know, there's a lot of times we talk about things from the Bible. People say, well, the Bible's out of date. I think most fathers of the bride would love for us to go back to the idea of biblical marriages and biblical weddings, because it worked a little bit different in biblical times. You see, according to Genesis 34:12, there was this thing called the bride price. Make the price for the bride and the gift I am to bring as great as you like, and I will pay whatever you ask me. Only give me the young woman as my wife. Now again, you have to remember that marriages in biblical times were arranged marriages. And when I call them arranged, it's not like they went down to Walmart and purchased the groom or the bride. It's not like that was a mail order bride system. They were actually negotiated. So there was this big contract that was negotiated, and usually as part of the negotiation, here we go, usually as part of those negotiations, then you know what? Typically the bride would come with a dowry. Now usually that would be property, or livestock, or something that the groom would get into this marriage, and what the groom would get out of it. Because remember, at that time, I didn't make the rules, so please don't shoot me for this one, but I didn't make these rules. But at that time, women were not allowed to own property during biblical times. So that means the dowry went to the groom, and that became his possession, whether the marriage worked out or not. And so how the price tag on these contracts would depend on how big the dowry was, what the family status was, and so the groom would actually pay a price to the bride's family to enter into the contract. Wouldn't that be cool? So they're going to pay you for whatever you're giving them. And while I mentioned what this could be, it could the father of the bride would pick out the price tag, and you know what? It could be anything. listen to this price tag. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 25. Saul replied, said to David, "The king wants no other price for the bride than 100 Philistine foreskins to take revenge on his enemies." Saul's plan was to have David fall by the hands of the Philistines. So you understand, while it's a setup, Saul sets, how is that for a romantic wedding gift? "I want scalps. I want you to go out and basically take out some of the Philistines, and the price for marrying my daughter, no money. Just bring me the scalps of these people." And so there is this negotiated price. And then when the blessed event came, well, the groom and his family pay the price to enter the contract for the bride. And then afterwards, they pay for the reception. Now, the bride's family would pay for the ceremony in biblical times, but it was the groom that paid for the reception. Now, his family would take that responsibility, as shown in John chapter 2, verses 9 through 10. Then he called the bridegroom, he being the master of ceremonies, he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wines," or the chipper wines, if you want to go with the Hans phrase there, "the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink, but you have saved the best until now." So I want you to see who got called when they were going to give the compliment about the good wine being at the end. It wasn't the bride, because her family wasn't responsible for the reception. It was the groom. Now, there are a lot of dads saying, "Yeah, I know where the costs rack up, because you notice it was going to be in the reception." So don't you think we should go back to biblical marriages? You know, the biblical wedding ceremony, let them split the price kind of 50-50, and the bride's family gets a chunk of change for taking their daughter away from them. I don't know that we want to go that far, because I don't know that we want to go back to arranged marriages. But I need you to see this idea, because this morning we're going to discuss the bride price. Now, when I say that, I'm not talking about the price of going out and finding your son a mate. I'm talking about the price that it took for God to arrange our wedding. We've been looking at these verses in Ephesians chapter 5. "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church, and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated their own body, but they feed and care for their body just as Christ does the church, for we are members of his body." So this is the analogy that Paul gives us. He ties the idea of getting into this relationship with Jesus, this church relationship, this Christian relationship, he is going to make the analogy is kind of just like getting married. And so we've looked at that so far, and we've met the bride and groom, and we've discussed some of the expectations, and now we're going to talk about the price tag. And the first thing is, we need to remember, just like Saul told David how many Philistines he had to kill to be willing to allow him to marry his daughter, the price would have been determined by the bride's father, which is, in this case, is God. Now, that's a little weird, because he's also the groom's father, because remember, Jesus was the Son of God. But in this case, he is negotiating the price with the groom, Jesus, on what is it going to cost you to get your bride. God himself is going to set that price tag. And so what was the price tag? We've already looked in depth at this scripture. I'm not going to dive back into it, but I do want to remind you the price. Romans chapter 5, verse 8, here's the price tag. "But God demonstrated his own love for us in this. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." That's the price tag. Jesus, if you want to buy them back, Jesus, if you want to marry this bride, if you want the church, then you are going to have to give your life for it. And he meant literally, on a cross, being nailed there. But you know what? It goes a little deeper than just the idea of being nailed to a cross. According to Galatians chapter 3, verse 13, "Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us, for it is written, 'Cursed is everyone who hung on a pole.'" We get this key word here that we're looking at in here, this idea that Christ died for us because and then became cursed. He took on our cursings. And why he did that is just simple. It's because he came to redeem us. It's the word that's caught right there. Christ redeemed And redeemed has a very simple definition. It means to gain or regain possession of something, but not for free. It's got a price tag to it, in exchange for a price. And this is important to us. It's important that we get this, because in this model of Jesus and the church, the bride and the groom, the marriage that we want to talk about, the relationship between the two, this is important because Christ gave something, his life, to get something, us. Remember, this is a negotiated contract between the father of the bride and the father of the groom, and they're negotiating. So at any point, Jesus could have walked out of the contract before he signed it and said, you know what, that's a high price tag. I do not think I am interested in that price tag. I do not want to deal with that price tag. But you know what? That's not what happened. So this morning, we are going to talk about the price tag a little more in depth. And the cool thing is that we get this wonderful object lesson in the Old Testament. It's from a book called Hosea. I'm not going to sing. It's Hosea. And it's a love story, because it's the love story of Hosea and Gomer. Not Pyle, not a U.S. Marine, okay? But this was actually a female. This is for Hosea and Gomer. And so God is going to basically look at Hosea and say, I have a job for you. Now, you're probably saying, who is Hosea? I have no idea. Well, here are a few facts that maybe you want to know about Hosea. Hosea, like Jeremiah, was a prophet. So remember, we started, not a bullfrog, he was a prophet. Okay, so we started this entire year doing the visions of faith, and we went back through the book of Jeremiah, and we found that Jeremiah was a prophet, and also Hosea was also a prophet. However, where Jeremiah was prophesying to Judah, Hosea was in the nation of Israel. Remember, there was a split in the country, and 2 tribes went this way, and 10 tribes went this way. And so we have 2 kingdoms. And so Hosea is, well, he's preaching to the other kingdom, the other side of the war there. And, well, he's probably a contemporary of a guy that we know, Isaiah. That's the big book. If you just kind of let the Bible fall open to the middle, that big prophet right in the middle, that's Isaiah. So Hosea is preaching at the same time, and so we know already because of Jeremiah that we're having problems with the idea of the Israel nation, that the Israel nation was not being faithful to God. Now, like Jeremiah, who taught via object lessons, Hosea was also given an object lesson. Now, you're probably thinking, he's not a very good prophet. Jeremiah got like 8. He only got one? Well, trust me. He only got one, but it was a doozy, because I want you to look at what God asked Hosea to do as he's painting this picture of what it means to be brought back, the bride price. This is what it says. We're having tech problems all across the board this morning, or I've just got a tricky, itchy trigger finger here. Hosea chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. The word of the Lord came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, during the reign of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, the king of Judah, and during the reign of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, go marry a promiscuous woman and have children with her. For like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord. So he married Gomer, daughter of Diablon. Oh my gosh, what a request. Think about what God is asking here. He calls Hosea aside and said, have I got a mission for you? Have I got a message for you? I want you to get married. And Hosea is probably thinking, that's not such a bad mission. Yeah, but I got a specific qualifications for your bride here. I want you to go and pick a promiscuous woman. So understand really what God was asking Hosea to do. From the start, he was asking him to choose a wife that would just never be happy with just you. You're never satisfier. You're never going to fill her. You're never going to make the knees. I'm never going to just want you. She's never going to want just you. She's always going to be looking for more. I want you to choose a wife that will never be faithful to you. You can give her all the presents that you want. You can show her all the love that you want. You can do everything that you want for her. You can show her love all day long. And guess what? She's still not going to be faithful to you. She's going to go her own way. I want you to choose a wife and have kids with her. that one day is going to walk out on you. Can you imagine that? I would be looking at God and say, God, I think you've missed the whole point of marriage here. Why on earth would I choose that kind of a situation? What on earth is God's point? And God's point is really simple. He mentioned it in Hosea chapter 1, verse 2. For like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord. You see, God is dealing with a nation of Israel. It's a nation of people that he chose. Remember Abraham? It's a nation of people that he delivered. Remember Moses? It's a nation of people that he blessed with the very land that they're living in. Remember Joshua? They're the people that he watched over. Remember Judges and the Kings? But you know what? They were also people that were just flat out being unfaithful to God. In this point, well, that's God. He wants us to understand what it means to be unfaithful. But there's another lesson for us. See, a lot of times I think God called me because I'm a talented person. Man, I got skills to use in his kingdom. Have you ever seen some of the things I can do on a computer? Man, I can just do it. And I love the people that sing. They've got, surely God picked them because of all their skills. Well, understand, when God told Hosea, go and look for Gomer, he says, you know what? I'm not picking because you're the cream of the crop. I didn't do this because you're just the best of the best. You're not the top shelf items here. I'm looking at the lower rack here, you know, where they put the cereal that comes in the bags, and it's like 50% cheaper than the stuff in the box. That's what God's looking at. He says, you know what? I am unconcerned with your pedigree. How you got to this relationship, how you got to this point, how you got to this moment in your life, I don't care. You're not getting here based off of your family name. You're not getting here based off of what you've done. You're not getting here based off of anything in your past. God is unconcerned with your pedigree. He's not buying puppies. Okay? He's looking for people. And you know what? This is the part that just kind of makes me feel really great. God knew what he was getting when he bought it. He didn't go to the store and pick me out and get home and say, and read the box and say, well, wait a minute. It says you're supposed to be able to do this, but when I put the batteries in, you don't jump that far. Okay? He doesn't look at me and say, wait a minute, you're supposed to be able to say 10 things, but this button only lets you say 8. God knew exactly what he was getting. I am not defective in God's eyes. I'm exactly what he went to the store to purchase. He knew what I was before he ever took me home and said, you know what? I want a relationship with you. Man, that's awesome. That means I don't have to hide anything from God. God knew all of the things that I struggle with before he ever died for me. That's what that verse says. While we were yet sinners, he died for us. God didn't wait for me to fix it. Now, let's be very honest. This is a tough object lesson. But straight up, what the next part of this object lesson is, I think I would just tell God, you've lost your mind. I don't know that I could do what God is about to ask Hosea to do. You see, because what does happen is Gomer does leave him. Gomer goes off to live her own life. In spite of all the efforts that Hosea made, Gomer leaves. And then God looks at Hosea and says, hey, go buy her back. Huh? Go buy her back? What are you talking about? I mean, well, here's what you need to know about the story. Not only does she leave him, but she goes from just being a promiscuous woman to actually being a person that sells herself for money. She becomes a prostitute. And God looks at Hosea and says, go buy her back. That has to be a tough pill to swallow, isn't it? I mean, that would be hard. Man, somebody walked on me and God, you're saying go buy them back? Are you crazy? I mean, I already paid once for this marriage. I put everything into this. Go, but what are you asking me to do? I want you to hear the full request, and then we'll talk about it. See, the full request is found in Hosea chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. The Lord said to me, go show your love to your wife again. Okay? though she is loved by another man and is an adulteress, love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes. So I being Hosea, bought her for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer of lethical of barley. I don't know whether that was cheap or expensive. I'll be honest with you. Then I told her, you are to live with me many days. You must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any other man. And I will behave the same way toward you. Now, I really want you to grasp this, because this is the picture of God in us. If you're trying to understand this relationship between why am I so valuable to God? Why did Jesus love me so much? Why did he come and give? Here's your picture. You see, God tells Hosea to once again pursue his wife. But not just pursue her. What did he say? God tells him to go and love her. That's hard, isn't it? She cheated on him. She walked on him. She's the one that me, God. I mean, he would have been very justifiable saying, God, no, you missed the point here. That's not the way marriage works. You enter into the relationship, you leave, I'm done with you. But God said, understand, this isn't a normal marriage. This is an object lesson. This is a picture for you. And so, love her in spite of the adultery. Now, this is important because he does not say, forget the adultery ever happened. He doesn't say that, you know what, don't do that. He said, you know what, you know what she is. You know what she's done. You know where she's been. You know how she's living her life. You know all about, you know this woman, and I am asking you, I am commanding you to love her in spite of what has happened. That's a big ask. You think you could do that? Honestly, I would struggle with that. I mean, this is talking about a level of forgiveness that I don't know that I have in me. But God did. And that's the picture. Now, it appears Gomer's lifestyle has landed her in a bit spot, because not only has she become promiscuous and she's been selling herself, now she's actually she's on the block to be sold as a slave. Thus, the first act of love Hosea has to do is go buy back her freedom. Man, what a picture of what Jesus did for us. The very first act of love is he had to make us free. We've heard a lot about people being made free in the news here lately. There's been a lot of civil unrest about what it means to be free. There's been a lot of what it means to be free. And let's forget about the civil stuff, just alone the way we've been dealing with the virus. And this whole year has been all about what's wrong with freedom. Now, in the culture that Hosea is living, you gotta really wrap your head around something. He had already paid a price to negotiate that contract so that he could actually marry this woman. Now, I don't know what the original contract was. The Bible doesn't tell us. Okay? Now, he is going to go and he's going to buy her off of the slave block. So guess what? In the culture they are living, whether we like it or not, she would no longer be considered a person. She would be considered property at that point. Now, I'm not saying I agree with the culture. I'm just telling you what the story is. She would have been considered property at that point. And what's important about that is, because since she would have been considered property at that point, Hosea could have done any and absolutely everything he wanted to with this woman, and nobody would have blinked. She had committed adultery. He could have taken her, he could have bought her off the block, taken her to the public square, stood her in the square, and stoned her to death, and nobody would have said anything. As a matter of fact, they mopped up a stone and helped him. That's the culture we're talking about here. Again, I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm not saying it's the right culture. But I'm telling you, that's the culture, and that's what makes what I'm about to show you so very amazing, because Hosea had a right. We talk a lot about our rights here. Hosea had a right to do whatever he wanted. He paid for her. He followed the instruction. He had been faithful. He could have done anything he wanted. It was his choice. And that's what makes this choice so amazing. He takes her home, not as property, but as his wife. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that awesome? He doesn't look at her as property. He gives her back the title that she got from the original contract. He says, you are my wife. I'm not going to treat you like property. We're not going out to the public square. I'm not going to condemn you for your past. I'm going to bring you back into the exact relationship again. That's amazing. He offers her his forgiveness in the future. What does he say? You're going to live with me. You're going to come in here and I'm going to forgive you. I'm not going to put you down. I'm not going to bring up your past. I'm going to just go with what we are right now. I'm moving forward with our relationship. That's incredible. He does so as a gift to her. Now, I think at the very least, he probably should have at least made her go and work this off, right? She cost him a lot of money. Not to mention his reputation. How'd you like to be the prophet, God's man, who can't even keep his own wife happy? How'd you like to be in that boat? Don't you think she owed something to Hosea? Shouldn't he at least given her a job and said, you're going to work this many months and at least repay me for the money I spent to buy you off the block? Because you shouldn't have been out there doing that. What did he ask for in payment? Nothing. He said, you know what? You're worth it to me. I wonder how Gomer looked at him when he said this. You know what? You're coming home with me. I paid the price not once for you, but twice. And now you're coming home, and I'm going to treat you as my wife. I'm going to love you. Now, just so you know, Gomer doesn't get off scot-free. There were some things that Homer told me that Hosea told her. First of all, you're going to have to stop being a prostitute if you're going to have this relationship. You know, I bought you off the block, and you're coming home with me, and I'm going to make you my wife again. But you understand, your life, it's in the past. Not acceptable. We're not going to go through the thing of where you say you're my wife, but then you're out doing anything else that you want. Understand, we're going to get back into this relationship, and you're going to have to hold up your end of the relationship. You're going to come home, and you're going to be my wife. And you're not going to be intimate with any other men. I am not going to be one of many. I'm going to be your one and only. Do you get this picture? Isn't that a beautiful picture of what Jesus did for us? Isn't that what the gospel was all about? There I was, and I was basically a sin to my own slave. I am captive, and I am on the block, and the world is selling me cheap. And Jesus comes along, and he says, you know what? I'm going to die for you. I'm going to pay such a heavy price for you, you aren't going to believe how valuable you are to me. And then he's going to look at that price tag and he say, you know what, though? If you want to live in this relationship, it's me and you. Not me, you, and many. This relationship was designed to be a monogamous relationship. I am not to worship other gods. I am just supposed to be in this relationship with Jesus. So he commits to her. Isn't that incredible? Because not only does he sit here and say, these are all the things you're going to do, but then he goes on to say, and I will behave the same way toward you. In other words, I am going to give you the same level of commitment you gave me. You choose to live in this relationship, bygones will be gone, bygones. Your past is gone. You've been redeemed. But here's the amazing thing. He didn't take her home and put handcuffs on her. He didn't put a tracking device on her. He didn't hire a bodyguard to follow her around and say, you will live by these rules or else. He brought her into the relationship and he says, okay, here's the way it's going to work. Now you have to choose. Okay. She had to choose. So obviously we're going to turn to the end of the book and you're going to tell me how well Gomer and Hosea did in their marriage. Nope. You know why? Because they're never mentioned again. Never. You never hear Gomer's name mentioned again in Scripture. We don't know how the story ends. Did she come home? Did she become the faithful wife? Did they get enjoyed? Did they get into their marriage? Did it work? Did Hosea keep bringing up what happened? I don't know what happened. As a matter of fact, I think that's the point. See, because what happens next depends on what I do next. See, the reality is, God has already done all that he's going to do. He's already laid the price tag out there. And after God laid the price tag out there, you want the picture of grace and mercy? He laid the price tag out there. He said, then guess what? I'm going to pay the price. And now he looks at you and he says, now, I paid the price. I've established the boundaries. I put it out there for you. But I'm not going to force you into this relationship. I'm not going to make you be part of this relationship. You're going to have to choose this relationship for yourself. That's a little hard, isn't it? As a matter of fact, not only does the book of Hosea not tell us how this ends, the end of the book, this is the way it ends. Who is wise? Let them realize these things. Who is discerning? Let them understand the ways of the Lord are right, and the righteous walk in them, but the rebellious stumble in them. Wow, that's just how God closes it? Talk about an uneasy ending. He basically says, you want to be wise? Walk in the relationship. You want to be a fool? Fine, I'll let you be a fool. But you're going to stumble. You're going to fall. Because you were designed to live in this relationship. Now, that's a hard lesson, and I realize there are some that just aren't going to understand just how much this wraps out. So I want to give you a quick summary of what this message means to you. Those that are sitting here in the building, those that are out in the parking lot, those that are online, here's what this message means to you. Number one, never forget this. God loves you very much. All of this begins with that foundation of love. Number two, he paid a heavy price to purchase you off of the block of your sin slavery. You get it, right? He paid that price. Number three, he offers you hope in the form of forgiveness. He's willing. And you know what? He desires an eternal relationship with you. He offers you that future. What a picture. What a picture. But you do get it, right? Your choice. Like Gomer, he can purchase, but we have to choose to accept this relationship. He's not going to force us. So this morning, I want to ask you, there is no doubt about it. The price, she's been paid. The contract is out there. We call it the covenant. Jesus says, I came and I gave my life for it. But what do you choose? Do you choose the relationship and you come back and you live with your husband, Jesus? Or in spite of all that he's done for us, in spite of all that he gave, in spite of the heavy price that he paid, do you merely choose to go your own way? Do your own thing. Tell God it wasn't enough. That's a hard choice. Because I like doing things my way. Or is it a hard choice? Because I know how my way usually ends things up. Broken. Don't believe me? Look out in the world today. Do you not see the broken? Do you not see where doing things our own way is leading humanity? Can you not see it? The more we run from God and we try to live on that block, the more choices we make to pull us away. And God very easily says, come on home, folks. Choose.